It would be a great thing to denuclearize the peninsula, to get those weapons off of that. But the thing that is most dangerous about it is the character who holds the control over them today.
North Korea may soon be ready to launch a nuclear strike. It's Friday, October 20th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Pakistan shores up its border with Afghanistan, powering the Mekong's energy future. VOA Business Scene, growing more wheat, Ai Weiwei's latest movie. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Two top U.S. officials say North Korea is likely just months away from being capable of striking the United States with a nuclear missile. CIA Director Mike Pompeo and U.S. National Security Advisor General H.R. McMaster made the assessment at a forum in Washington Thursday. Pompeo said he is deeply worried about the advancing threat from North Korea and the possibility it could spark a nuclear arms race across East Asia. When asked about Pyongyang's pursuit of missile technology that could launch a warhead to targets in the United States, Pompeo said, quote, "We ought to behave as if we are on the cusp of them achieving that objective." He added, "They are so far along that it's now a matter of thinking about how do you stop the final step." Earlier this year, Pompeo suggested the United States move to somehow disarm the threat.
It would be a great thing to denuclearize the peninsula, to get those weapons off of that. But the thing that is most dangerous about it is the character who holds the control over them today. So from the administration's perspective, the most important thing we can do is separate those two, right? Separate capacity and someone who might well have intent and break those two apart. And I am confident the intelligence community will present a wide range of options for the president about how we might go about that.
General McMaster said Washington was racing to resolve the situation short of using military force. McMaster said, "We're not out of time, but we're running out of time. Accept and deter is unacceptable." The comments by Pompeo and McMaster come as tensions between the United States and North Korea have been steadily rising following Pyongyang's latest nuclear test last month, its sixth overall, and repeated tests of what intelligence officials have assessed to be both intermediate and long-range ballistic missiles. But Pompeo cautioned there are still questions about just how robust the North Korean nuclear threat has become. To fund its missile and nuclear programs, North Korea's government has relied for decades on illicit trade to fill its coffers. But a new report notes what appears to be a recent rise in Pyongyang's trafficking of illegal wildlife from African nations, including the Democratic Republic of Congo, Angola, Mozambique, and South Africa, with four high-profile incidents in the last 3 years. The new report by the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime warns that the continent's endangered rhinos and elephants are in peril. Anita Powell reports from Pretoria.
North Korea finds itself increasingly squeezed by U.S. and international sanctions imposed to try to stop the nation's nuclear weapon and ballistic missile programs. The hermit nation has long found creative ways to bring in cash, often through smuggling under the cover of diplomacy. But one source of illicit income hits an especially vulnerable group, Africa's endangered wildlife. Africa's rhino and elephant populations are already at dire levels, motivated by the Asian market's growing demand. In 2015, South Africa expelled a North Korean diplomat arrested in Mozambique with 4.5 kilograms of rhino horn and $100,000 in cash. It was not an isolated incident. More than half of the diplomats arrested for smuggling rhino horn and ivory over the last 3 decades have been North Korean, according to a new report by South African researcher Julian Rademeyer.
I find it very hard to believe that they're operating completely alone, that they're not being sanctioned in some way by the regime, or at least by their superiors. North Korean embassies, by their very nature, are quite strictly controlled. People cannot move very easily and freely.
African nations have been reluctant to challenge their ties with a nation that supported them in their post-independence struggles, and that, because of its trade restrictions, is in a position to offer good deals.
If a country like North Korea comes along and offers a relatively good deal on refined petroleum, for instance, which is one of their main exports to Africa, it's understandable that African governments may not ask a lot of questions about where that petroleum comes from in the face of all these massive pressures on service delivery.
Rademeyer says the laws do exist to stop illegal trade by diplomats, but the will is often absent.
Law enforcement officials are unlikely to want to stop diplomats. Governments don't want to become involved in diplomatic incidents. Governments with close ties to North Korea don't particularly want to inflame tensions. But the Vienna Convention does allow for cases where there is evidence or there is a compelling case to be made that illegal items are being smuggled, to search those bags and take action.
VOA contacted the North Korean embassy here in Pretoria, requesting a response to the allegations made in the report. However, they did not respond to our request for an interview. Anita Powell, VOA News, Pretoria.
These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. U.S. Secretary of State embraces closer U.S. ties with India, calls out China. Bangladesh registers thousands of orphans in Rohingya refugee camps. Facebook knocks down Thai Prime Minister's claim of meeting with CEO Mark Zuckerberg. Activists say UK anti-slavery drive must stop victims before they leave Vietnam. Workers at iPhone supplier in China protest unpaid bonuses. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Pakistan is fencing its long border with Afghanistan, hoping it will prevent terrorist attacks on both sides of the traditionally open and largely porous frontier. Ayaz Gul reports from the remote Pakistani border village of Angur Adda.
Pakistani officials insist the fencing project and construction of new outposts are helping boost security and effectively deterring illegal incursions. The military flew a group of reporters this week to the remote mountainous border to showcase unprecedented fortification measures along the 2,600-kilometer historically open border between the two countries. At a newly built fort in Angur Adda in the South Waziristan tribal district, overlooking the volatile Afghan district of Barmal, the regional military commander, Major General Noman Zakaria, appeared confident the border management effort will reduce militant activity on both sides.
I have a border of about 105, 106 kilometers that this agency shares with the Afghanistan border. It's going to be completely fenced. The border forts will be completed. There'll be not an inch of international border that shall not remain under our observation by December of 18.
The general described the fence as a paradigm change and an epoch shift in the border control management. He noted, while Pakistani troops occupy over 150 outposts in the area under his command, Afghan forces maintain only 21 posts on their side due to capacity issues and troop shortages.
We are sitting here to stay now, inshallah. So, while we do this, for our sakes, we compliment our Afghan brothers and we compliment their capacity issues so that they are also very sure that there is no place left unguarded in Pakistan and Afghanistan border.
Modern surveillance systems, including drones, are also being deployed to ensure day and night monitoring of the border. Officials estimate the border security plan will cost Pakistan around $532 million. The Afghan government is opposed to the fencing effort. Kabul traditionally disputes the colonial era demarcation drawn up by the British in 1893 and does not recognize it as an international boundary. It maintains the fencing plan would add to the problems of divided families and tribes, mainly ethnic Pashtuns, straddling the dividing line. Islamabad rejects Kabul's assertions over the status of the border. But despite Pakistan's border security measures, the country remains under scrutiny amid persistent Afghan and U.S. allegations. Islamabad is secretly helping the Taliban and its ally, the Haqqani terrorist network, to use safe havens on Pakistani soil for plotting attacks against Afghanistan. Islamabad strongly denies the charges and says sustained security operations have cleared all areas of militants on its side of the border. Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Angur Adda, Pakistan.
Happening now in Asia, former Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif has been indicted on corruption charges based on the so-called Panama Papers. The country's anti-corruption court indicted the 67-year-old Sharif during a hearing in Islamabad. His daughter denied the allegations and characterized them as revenge. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us today. Advocates of renewable energy here in the United States point to its increasingly competitive cost in arguing against greater use of fossil fuels. Experts at a U.S. think tank have the same message for countries in the Mekong region, which are considering plans to expand hydropower dams and coal plants. Faith Lapidus voices this story from VOA Khmer reporters Sophikephana Nem and Vathana Surun and Narin Sun.
There are new economic and technological opportunities for improving and diversifying the Mekong River's energy mix, laid out in a report from the Washington-based Stimson Center. Report co-author Brian Eiler says the region's governments would be wise to review their energy master plans in order not to miss out.
So it's a good time to take a pause. Not saying, our message is not for countries in the Mekong subregion to stop power sector planning, but again, to pause, take a look at these emerging trends.
New technologies carry less environmental and social impacts than large hydropower dams and coal-fired plants, and they make economic sense as well, says his co-author, Courtney Weatherby. She notes that as solar and wind technologies become more affordable and efficient, their power will be cheaper than energy generated by the hydropower projects planned on the Mekong and its tributaries.
If you have solar available within the next few years at 6 cents a kilowatt hour, then some of the most damaging dams really don't make sense when you look at the economic calculus for building them.
But about half of Cambodia's energy needs are currently met by hydropower. And Ministry of Environment spokesperson Sao Sopiap says the government carries out comprehensive environmental impact statements for dams and addresses their negative impacts. He says energy can be generated from many sources, and hydropower from the dams is a renewable energy that Cambodia has good potential for. Despite the Cambodian government's focus on dams, alternative energy projects in the country are advancing with donor support, and rural households are also becoming aware of the increasingly affordable solar power technology. 65-year-old Im Boy is one of thousands of Cambodian villagers who've installed solar panels. He says he was waiting for electricity for so long, he decided to buy solar power to use. He adds, it's so boring when there's no electricity, and residents in other areas have it too. The Stimson Center experts say as Cambodia and the other Mekong countries expand their electricity sources and national power grids through new technology and investment, there are also opportunities to improve efficiency in transmission, increase cross-border energy trade, and expand connections in rural areas. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Philippine military officials say a top Islamic State militant is believed to have been killed by government forces who liberated the southern city of Marawi this week. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte declared Marawi liberated from the terrorist influence. More than 1,000 people have been killed there since May. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, the business of celebrating Diwali, quality down for some Japanese steel, and Airbnb up in the air in China. These are the topics Skylar Ogden has on today's VOA Business Scene.
This is Business Scene. I'm Skylar Ogden. Gold sellers in India's western city of Surat are expecting a surge in sales this week as the Hindu festival of Diwali kicks off. Back in August, jewelers were subject to the government's Prevention of Money Laundering Act, which required customers to submit their tax ID for every purchase above $772. Now that requirement has changed. Shopkeeper Milan Shah.
The government has given us a great gift by extending the limit of jewelry purchases without a PAN card to $3,064. The atmosphere is very welcoming. Phones are ringing constantly for more orders and bookings.
India is the world's second biggest gold consumer, and gold sales usually pick up at this time of year as the wedding season begins, and buying gold is believed to bring prosperity, wealth, and luck. Japan takes another blow to its reputation for quality as steelmaker Kobe admits to falsifying safety data for metals used in products ranging from cars to bullet trains to aircrafts. A local Tokyo resident says,
I'm worried that more similar scandals and companies will be exposed. Fabrication seems to have become a systemic problem for Japanese manufacturing. It's a shame.
Kobe is Japan's third largest steelmaker. Its customers include Toyota Motor, General Motors, and Ford, as well as aircraft manufacturers like Boeing and Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. Hiroya Kawasaki is the president of Kobe.
To all the users and consumers who are our customers, to all members of the Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry, we deeply apologize for the distrust and concern we have caused.
Analysts predict legal battles to be brought by the shareholders and claims filed by the many affected companies. They also say there will be penalties for Kobe for violating unfair competition laws. The financial fallout has caused shares of Kobe to plummet over the last several weeks, wiping out about $1.8 billion off its market value. The week-long Party Congress kicks off in Beijing, China this week, and if you're looking for a place to stay, Airbnb won't be an option. The company has suspended all of its listings for October, vaguely citing external circumstances as the reason. It's not uncommon for China to ramp up surveillance and censor online activity around high-profile events, and security officials won't be taking any chances this year as Chinese President Xi Jinping further cements his power. Airbnb is expected to be back up and running in November after the Party Congress meeting. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news alert from VOA Asia. As of mid-October, almost 11 million people, or more than 67% of registered voters, had returned their same-sex marriage surveys ahead of the November 7th deadline in Australia. Recent polls suggest most are saying yes, although few issues have divided the Australian public in recent times as much as this vote. Stay up to date every day at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, American farmers are on track to plant the fewest acres of wheat since the U.S. Department of Agriculture began keeping records in 1919. As VOA's Kane Faribault reports, climate and price are just a few of the many factors influencing a farmer's decision to grow and harvest the crop.
Russ Higgins' ancestors settled this patch of land in northern Illinois in 1858. The first plow churned up the fertile soil here nearly 160 years ago. One crop that has always had a place in the fields was wheat.
The next crop is going to go in as soon as we take this year's soybean crop out, hopefully within 2.5 to 3 weeks.
But there's not much wheat to see around here, not just because it's out of season. There just aren't a lot of farmers planting it.
I've watched Illinois over the last 20-odd years really concentrate on corn and soybean production.
Including Higgins, who dedicates only a small part of his farm to wheat, which this year provided only a modest return on his investment.
We averaged about 83 bushel this year. Truth be told, it's probably going to look a little better than corn and soybean.
Better or not, Higgins says the climate in northern Illinois is not ideal to grow wheat. And since there are fewer farmers producing it, it has gotten too expensive to grow.
There's not a readily available market year-round. We have the chance to market wheat in about a 3-week window.
Executive Director of the Illinois Wheat Association, Jim Fraley, says another major factor for wheat's demise in the U.S. is global competition.
It has grown worldwide. It's grown in countries that are really even underdeveloped but still growing good wheat crops to help feed themselves. And so we're seeing a lot of competition worldwide.
If low prices for corn and soybean continue to reduce a farmer's overall profits, a return to wheat might be the solution. Nate Parabov, VOA News, Morris, Illinois.
Human Flow, by internationally acclaimed artist and activist Ai Weiwei, highlights the plight of refugees around the world. The Chinese dissident captures the massive flow of humanity on our planet from above using drones. Ai Weiwei filmed people fleeing war, environmental crises, and religious persecution in 23 different countries in 40 different refugee camps. His goal is to show the flood of refugees has global repercussions. VOA's Penelope Palou spoke with the artist.
Being a refugee is much more than a political status. It is the most pervasive kind of cruelty that can be exercised against a human being. You are forcibly robbing this human being of all aspects that would make human life not just tolerable, but meaningful in many ways.
According to the documentary Human Flow, over 65 million people in the world today have been forcibly displaced from their homes. Using cameras attached to drones, Ai Weiwei films humanity's movement from up high.
Human flow as always happens in the human history. It's, in many cases, it's part of our humanity and our civilization.
But the social anomaly of our times, says the filmmaker, is the effort by countries to stem that flow by preventing refugees from crossing borders and integrating into new societies. After a harrowing sea voyage and days of walking, many refugees from the Middle East make their way to northern Greece, only to be stopped on its border with Macedonia.
Over 70 borders are built up their fences and walls, and forbidden any refugee to pass through. So by doing that, they really not only stopped the lifeline of those refugees to find a safe place, even just temporarily across the border and go to another location, but also put them in extreme dangerous condition.
2 months old and born here, but he didn't have any vaccination, no showering facilities. The hygienic situation is very bad.
Ai's look at the refugee crisis is as intimate as it is global. Human Flow shows masses fleeing wars, religious persecution, and environmental disasters. Ai Weiwei warns if we don't save those people from displacement, entire generations born without identity, prospects for a better life or a country, will be vulnerable to extremism and radicalization.
Those people, those child, when they grow up, they only see how their parents being badly treated, unfairly treated. The world watching but not doing anything. What kind of image would remain in their mind?
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We're heard on great radio stations like PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. Thanks for joining us today. Write to us and let us know what you think of the program at VOA Asia Facebook or send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Kelvin Fowler, managing editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, David Bird, and Skylar Ogden on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.